With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This episode of The Art of Rave was recorded during lockdown, so there were a couple of technical difficulties, so we apologise for any audio annoyance, but enjoy. My guests today are Fabio and Groove Rider, the true originators and godfathers of the drum and bass scene. For 30 years, they've been at the forefront of rave culture, named in the top 25 greatest DJs of all time, and more recently, celebrating three decades of rage back where it all began in heaven. From pirate radio to over a decade of residency on Radio 1, their influence is ongoing and they remain legends of the rave scene.
Oh, Becky Hill, Becky Hill!
Welcome to The Art of Rave. Thank you so much for being on. It is an absolute honour to have you guys on. I watched the documentary last night. I've listened through to the album and I've definitely felt the vibe from that era. And just to give you some background, this whole podcast has basically been about me, who was born in 94. And growing up, I fell in love with dance music, predominantly drum and bass, from about the age of 14. And from there, I felt like when I was legal enough to go raving, I went to a players' night on my 18th birthday in Fabric. And I've always loved raving, but I've always felt like there is something missing that was there back in the day that isn't really there now. And so I started a podcast to try and find out whether technology or whether my generation and having Spotify and YouTube and Logic to like make tunes on has changed the art of rave. So I wanted to, I'm speaking to people like you, and what I love about this is that I love rave stories. I love hearing other people's crazy stories about rave or how things have changed and DJs talking to each other. And I've already done a couple of episodes with Andy C and Zinc, and they have both told me stories about you two. So
better be good ones. Bit worried about that.
I don't think they dare tell a bad one.
That's right.
So tell me where it all began with you guys, is what I want to know. Where you fell in love with music and how it all happened.
Well, we're coming from West Indian backgrounds, so it's kind of natural to be into music as a West Indian. I know it sounds a bit weird, as you know, but it's true. I mean, like my old man, he was an introvert DJ. You know, I reckon he wanted to be a DJ on the side, but you know, he had to do normal job,
right? Like,
but you know, he loved his music, loved buying music, loved listening to it. He had a sound system in his house, in our house. You know, I just think it's just a regular thing for a West Indian.
Yeah,
just
for real.
In our DNA.
And growing up in South London as well, growing up in Brixton, music's around you everywhere. You know, my first memory was actually my dad had a party in the front room and I was upstairs sleeping. I weren't meant to be around. And I just remember walking into the room and everyone was dancing. They stopped as soon as I walked in there and my mum told me to go to bed.
Yeah.
And that was commonplace.
Parties all the time.
Parties all the time, music, you know, blues parties around the corner.
Yeah.
I used to sneak off and go to blues parties when I was 13, jump out the window and go to parties around the corner and stuff like
things
that.
Things we had to do, man.
And to be fair, it's never stopped with us.
Well, except like sneaking out of the window, obviously, but...
I still do that every now and again. Yeah, but music's always been around us. It's like lives, and it's always has been. And I can't think of a better job than what I do.
There isn't one.
There isn't.
I've sat down and thought about it. Like, maybe a footballer, but that's there's a lifespan on that.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no lifespan in music.
Exactly. And there's no lifespan on this. I mean, we can literally go on forever.
Yeah.
So am I right in thinking that you guys met at Pirate Radio?
Yes. Yeah,
we did. 100%.
But, you know, we knew each other from round the way because we're both from South London. And
Yeah. You're
growing up and everyone kind of know. If you're the same age, you kind of... I'm a bit older. I knew he was going to say that.
I didn't say anything.
I'm actually a bit older. Not as old, much older as he likes to be. But
this is going to be the podcast to split you two up.
I didn't say anything. I just sat there.
I knew it was coming. You know. But music has always been around, and I, as I said, I can't think of a better job. As Groove said, being a footballer or sportsman, but that's got a shelf life. And we haven't got a shelf life. And so, you know, that's just, it's the dream job.
Yeah.
And when we started, we had no idea that we had any life. There was
no, it's just, it's just something you could do. My main reason of getting into music, I'm not even going to lie, it was to get into clubs for nothing. I'm not even going to lie.
Yeah, I did exactly the same. First thing I did when I got into the industry, write a drum and bass tune, right? Yeah, front of the queue.
Exactly. I just didn't, because you have to remember, the time that we were growing up, getting into clubs was a problem for a black person.
Yeah.
And that's the era we come from. That's what was like growing up. So getting into a club for nothing as a black person, Jesus, that's the ultimate. So, yeah, I'm living the dream, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to see, and I've always felt like you guys have had the respect you deserve. Has it always been the case? And, you know, has getting into clubs now as a person of colour any easier than it was back then, or has it always been the same?
Well, I think what I was trying to say is the rave scene changed a lot of things. I mean, when we used to go out back in the day, there wasn't that kind of unity. There was, as I said before, black guys danced and white guys stood there and watched us. You know what I'm saying? Black guys used to... I used to be a soul dancer. I used to go out and dance. I used to have a kind of outfit I used to wear, and we used to take from black dance. Yeah, man. Yeah, yeah. It was a thing. It was real. It was real. And
he's on the internet.
There's nothing on the internet. Thank God. And there was a thing in the 80s about jazz dancing and jazz dancers and having a style, a 40s kind of style. And so that was a thing. So we used to go out and dance. And then the rave culture happened, and that broke down so many rules. I can honestly say I've never felt there's racism on the door or by security. I think what you get, it's different in the West End, though. And that's the sad thing. The sad thing is where they specifically play black music, they don't let black people in the club.
Yeah.
And I have an instance of Charlotte, my girlfriend, she DJed in the West End a lot. And so I got into this thing where going out to drum and bass all the time, I always just wanted a different kind of flavour. And I was into the whole hip-hop vibe. And I remember every time I used to go down the West End, first of all, you used to have to dress a certain way. You used to have to dress up more than a white person had to dress up. You really had to make an effort. And then you got scrutinized a lot more when you were walking through. You could see it on security's face as soon as you're walking up. Mm. It's kind of like they'd nudge each other and it's like, really, guys? But it's a kind of subconscious thing because
terrible.
As a black person, you kind of go through this kind of all the time. So you just see it, and it's really funny because it doesn't register, but because it happens a lot, you've just got this sense straight away. The worst thing was I went to a club, and I'm not going to name them. Maybe a year ago I would have. It's no longer open. But it was the biggest club in the West End at the time. This story is quite unbelievable. And Charlotte was playing, and I was meant to go down there with Charlotte because I thought I have to go with her to get in the club, which is, that in itself is kind of like, really? And I remember I was doing something, and I said, look, I'll meet you down there. And I was really paranoid because I sat there and I thought, I really don't want to do this because I know I'm going to have to go through some bullshit. So anyway, got to the club. 10 minutes of procrastination on the door, trying to tell the security, it's my girlfriend, she's playing there. He was going, no, you can't come in, blah, blah, blah. So guess what he done? He turned around, he said to me, I said, please, listen, can I go and get her? And they looked at each other and they were like, listen, mate, you got 5 minutes, right? Mm. Walk downstairs. Now, first of all, tell a lie. First of all, he said I weren't dressed right. And I weren't wearing shoes. And I had these kind of booty kind of things on, which you could, most, 95% of places, they would be like, you got shoes on. They were like, nah, they're not shoes. Walked in. As soon as I walked downstairs, I saw a bunch of white guys with dirty trainers on. I thought, wow, okay. So I was looking around for Charlotte and I couldn't find her. And I was in the club and the security guy came up to me and went, you need to get out of the club. I was like, what do you mean I need to get out? He said that we think you've been dealing drugs in here.
I went, mate, you're fucking kidding me.
I've literally just come down here to get my girlfriend to come upstairs and say to you guys, can I actually come into the club? He went, we've got you on video. He said, we've got you on videotape dealing drugs in here. I said, mate, I've been in here for 30 seconds. He went, get out. I went, what? He said, get out of the club. I said, are you being serious? He went, get out. And he went and got two other guys, huge guys. And I just looked around and thought, this can't really be happening. They escorted me up the stairs, chucked me out of the club and locked the doors. And I was just in absolute... This was what, 6 years ago?
I was going to say, this don't sound like too long ago.
It was about 2013, something like that. And, you know, there's a couple of things that go through your mind. One is to resort to stereotype and just go mad and just kick the door down and just go, hey, shit. The second is to walk away. Now, none of those options are great. Do you know what I'm saying? So what do you actually do in that situation? You walk away and you walked away from a situation where you've been thrown out of a club that plays black music because you're a black guy, and then you've been accused of dealing drugs on top of that. They said they had video evidence. And all of this was because I couldn't get in the club anyway. So I went downstairs to get someone to get me in the club. Then I got thrown out of the club. It was unbelievable what happened to me, and I was just, I didn't know how to feel, because when I just sat down at the door, is this really happening in the 2000s? Is this really happening? Mm. I mean, even in my darkest days of going out in the 80s, that nothing as bad as that happened. And this was a predominantly, well, it's not predominantly 100% black music. It was hip hop. It was a hip hop night.
Do you? Because I'm quite, I wanted to find out if the rave scene, especially how Jungle and where you started was quite ethnically diverse, how you feel now with how rave is, or that it's just a new generation thing, or if there is any sort of racism that you have noticed within that sort of community.
No, not really. I mean, you know, I've never, as I said, I always feel rave is a lot more open than other genres. There are those that think there is not enough diversity in the lineups. That can be debatable. I see both ends of that. Sometimes I do see maybe that there could be a bit more diversity. there was an issue with, there was a lot of talk about diversity a couple of months ago. Things hopefully have been rectified a bit. You know, it's been, you know, consciousness has been awoken. So I think people are, I think the thing that the time we're living in now is that people, isms aren't really, it's not happening in 2020. And with all the shit that's happening now, I think that people, whether it's sexism, whether it's homophobia or racism or ageism, I think people ain't having it no more. I just don't think they are. And so any little, if there's a, if anyone sees any flaws in anything, they'll talk about it.
Yeah.
And there's conversations that have been had, and pretty strong conversations, which is,
and it could be down to technology as well, and that's another thing that I talk about a lot in my podcast.
A lot of it is down to technology, and that drum and bass is so technical, and it's very complex, and it's got a sound that isn't, you know, we've got to remember another thing about drum and bass. It goes at 170. It's really fast music. It's not slow, you know what I mean? And then when you're listening to a little AJ Tracy, and you've got that like kind of little bubbling party vibe, and then you listen to drum and bass, it's there is an extreme difference between between the two. Do you know what I'm saying? And I think whereas there's not that those signatures of a big hook or something you can latch onto, drum and bass, you know it's got to hit you. It's got to hit you there. And if it doesn't, you're never going to like it.
You're not
going to like it. You can't ever force anyone to like drum. You know, like some people, they're like, yeah, well, I like a couple of drum and bass tunes. I like two, like Shaking the Do you know what I'm saying? When I'm like, well, you don't really like drum and bass, then it's not.
Can you do 6 hours in a room in dark lights? Like, that's when you know you fucking love drum and bass.
Tunes with no vocals, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to hear no vocals all night. You're just going to hear rhythm tracks. Can you handle it? No, you can't. You can't. And, you know, that's the thing. So it's either, that is the most wonderful thing about drum and bass, is that if you're in it, you're in it. And even if you go away from it, and even if you don't like what's happening now, you still love what's happening before. What's happened before. You always love those tunes that you used to go out and party to. And when you hear those tunes, that feeling of love, you know, that love you have for it, just comes flooding back. And then you go out and you might hear loads of new tunes, because there's not so much anthems now. It's very much... rollers are coming back, and it's very much very bass rhythm, and it's the anthems. I'm sure when you was going out, there was a lot more anthems than there are now.
There were. It's more like we've just coming out of the horns kind of phase within drum and bass, where it just be these big, long ship horns.
Now we're
kind of going more into those, back into those like really like earthy sounding bass.
Definitely that rootsy kind of vibe is definitely coming back, you know, all that kind of there's a lot of stuff is taking off that V sound of Di and Ronnie and Crust, and that kind of earthy Bristol sound is definitely coming back.
Massively. You know what I mean? I hear that, and because it kind of gives another side. I feel like Bristol drum and bass is almost a genre in its own sometimes.
Yeah, of course, absolutely.
Because I think, because it's so different to everything else. And I think what's so lovely about the genre is that it's always taken dives and turns. And I think coming back to the whole community thing as well, like, I am a part of a Facebook group called D&B, I can't remember what it's called. D&B Direct, I think it's called.
Okay.
And it's a big community of people who all love drum and bass and all talk about it online, send the memes and send the tunes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's of importance for that group, for everything to be, you know, any sort of phobia at all, transphobia, racism, homophobia, sexism, and it's not tolerated. And I think, you know, if we can thank anything, you know, is that we've got a rave scene that is still a safe space. And I'm glad that to hear that it's kind of changed a little bit from when you and Groove were getting into clubs, and you were like, oh, sick, oh, yeah, we get to go into clubs, because we won't be able to usually unless we had six girls with us.
Yeah, which is like, yeah, those. But, you know, sadly, and, you know, as I said, I've not been to the West End for a while, but sadly, that happens still. And I think I it does happen in like your local clubs in suburbia. Unfortunately, I think, you know, a lot of it is down to security as well. A lot of it is down to these guys that are just pumped up, you know, racists, and they just, you know, it's you know, and maybe they get a protocol. Maybe they get a protocol from the owners, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But in suburbia, I think, unfortunately, Becky, I think it still happens quite a lot. And I think your local club, I would suggest, if I was to go to a local club or a club in suburbia tonight, or when clubs open up again, I would have trouble getting in. Or if not have trouble getting in, I would have that look. I don't even want that look. I don't want no one to be. I'm walking down the road and 20 yards away is kind of like, yo, right? How do we feel about this guy? Why is that even a thing? Like, you know, that alone just makes me feel pissed off. Do you know what I'm saying?
That
alone makes me feel pissed off. The fact that you're even thinking that, and unfortunately. That's something I don't think is going to go for a long, long time, Becky, because I think it's something that's ingrained. And I
it's
think,
much deeper, yeah.
I think it's
societal, massively. Because I think a lot of white people don't even know that they're doing these microaggressions.
No, they don't. I'll tell you another, the last example. This 2 weeks ago, I went on a train and I sat down on the train. And no, actually, tell a lie. This was pre-COVID. This is when everyone could actually sit. There was no distancing. But this was like social distancing. I sat down and there was a seat next to me, empty. The one seat on the whole train that was empty. And you know, three people came on, looked and stood up. And I thought,
you're
wow.
Fucking
and you can sit down and go, maybe they don't want to sit down. And it's like, no, I know. You know, I've been around a long time. As I said, I know. I look and it's, Becky, it's when I say it's a split second, they don't even know they're doing it. It's literally they look and their brain just is like, no, don't sit there. And it's kind of like, one, I don't mind because I've got a spare seat and I'm quite cool with that. But at the same time,
yeah,
it's just
but it's the fucking principle of it.
It's the principle. And I walk off the train. I'm like, wow. And these people, you don't look at them and go, wow, that guy looks like a racist. I'm talking about normal people.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, coming home from work, and it's kind of like, oh, I'd rather stand up than sit down next to him. It's like, wow, that's deep. But look,
yeah, proper.
That's deep. It's deep. Because I look at these people, and I look. There was a woman in particular, and I'm staring at her, and she kept looking at me and looking away. And you know what? I could tell she felt really guilty. And I was thinking, don't you dare come sit down now. Don't come over and sit down now. Because you sat down and thought about it. Why did you
do that? Oh, my God.
And she kept looking at me. I could see her thinking, oh, God, I should really sit there.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a mad thing.
Oh, mad God.
Thing. Yeah, it's a mad
it's
thing.
It's awful.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it is the way it is. You know what I mean? And when I was growing up, I did sit down and think, I wish I was white, because of the way I felt about everything. Like, I saw white kids never having these problems, and I sat down and thought, God, is being black really that bad? Because I was dark-skinned as well. I used to get taken out of me by light-skinned black people. So that was a double-edged thing. Light-skinned black people used to be like, you're so black. And then, you know, you get older and things change and you feel proud of, you know, being black. And then that happens and you go back to, you know, I've got chucked out of a club because I was black. And I just sat down and thought, I've not felt like this for a long, 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 long time. And it just took me back. And I remember sitting down and walking, I was thinking, that just took me back to the 80s. And I hadn't felt like that for ages. And it just goes to show that, you know, sometimes things haven't moved on as much as you'd like to think. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's when incidents like that happen, it's just crazy. You know, we live in hope. We live in hope.
Well, I'm glad to know that the rave scene is a little bit better. Obviously not the posh dance wanking club scene. But I ain't fucking going to them clubs anyway. They ain't having my fucking money. I'm all about the sweaty dark warehouses in the middle.
For real. You know how it goes. You know, some people might have a difference of opinion about everything, but I feel things are not getting better. I think people are more aware. And I think as the more people that are aware and the more it's out there, the more it will
help
future generations. So, you know, we're talking about this shit now.
We have hope. Right. Let's get talking about you guys again and the success you've had. And I want to get straight back to Pirate Radio.
Yeah.
Pirate Radio was such an important thing that held together held together the fabric of the dance scene, you know, and people like Andy C sat in his room at 16 listening to, you know, records on Pirate Radio and ringing up and going, what was that tune you played three tunes ago? And you guys were the ones that were pushing that as well.
And telling him to piss off.
Fabio said that, not me. I just underlined that.
He's the nice guy.
I never told him to piss off, Andy. I never done it.
Oh, bless him. So do you, when Pirate started going... I suppose when Pirate stopped being Pirate, did you notice a change in the community or the scene through that?
No, because I think when Pirate opened the door to dance music and then mainstream radio took it on. So we left Pirate Radio, but then about, you know, 10 years later, we were on Kiss FM. And then we went to Radio One.
From Pirate to Kiss. Oh, yeah, there was a little gap, wasn't there?
Yeah, there was a little gap. But radio's been really important to us. It's been really important to our careers. Radio One was very important. So was Kiss FM.
Kiss FM, very important.
Over a decade on Radio One, isn't it? 14 years, did I read that right?
It's 13 years we were Radio One.
Right.
Incredible, really. I don't think...
Nobody's going to get that playing drum and bass the way we played it.
Exactly.
You know, we was proper gangster with it as well. You know, we weren't coming in with some like corporate voice or anything. We was proper gangster with it.
And it's funny because we left when... you know, things got more corporate because we could literally play what we wanted.
Yeah.
And towards the end, we were getting kind of, they were trying to draw us to play more mainstream stuff and record label kind of, and we weren't into that vibe. That was never us.
And one of us being like quiet and not.
Yeah, we were told we're talking too much. Yeah. That was our thing.
Wow.
You know, we were personalities and that's, personality radio has kind of gone a little bit.
Yeah,
you listen to radio now,
isn't it? You play the tunes and shut up. That's what
you play your tunes, shut up. You know, you play your tunes for the record companies and whatever, and you shut up.
Mm-hmm.
But we were like, you know, we like gassing and talking about stuff, and I think that's what drew people in.
Yeah,
and fact we were playing.
You might not even have been into drum and bass, but you would have got the band.
You'd listen for How interesting that you would, because I suppose when you start getting into Radio One, that's when, I mean, I'm predominantly mainstream with the music that I make, but the amount of fucking politics that is involved in that shit and like, you know,
exactly.
The radio.
Why is it supposed to be politics in music?
Right.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Exactly. But it's the big bosses who have taken a chance on signing something
of course.
Then they want it played on radio that's when they're going to you, you know. And I can imagine, you know, that was a big difference from back when, you know, you were just choosing tunes and playing them because you liked them.
And
really that's what it should be about.
You have to remember back then mainstream radio wasn't interested in dance music to the point that it is now. You know, it wasn't a thing. They were still on bad big bands and Celine Dion and all that kind of crap. So you know, so that's why we had to all start our own independent labels and all that, because we weren't getting our music heard. That's why there's so many independent labels now and big majors that's to go and sign them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, also, I remember our previous agent, she sent Radio 1 a letter in the days when you writ letters, not emails, years ago. And she was like, listen, I'm going to try and get you on Radio 1. And I was like, there's no way they're going to listen to this. This is about 92, 93, when it was kind of like really, really mainstream. They didn't have any commercial underground shows on there. And she wrote to them and they wrote back and they said, you know, we'll think about it, but right now it's not for us. Thing. And then literally 2 years later, One in the Jungle started on Radio 1, and which was, you know, an open forum for DJs and MCs to come on and do shows. And then we got headhunted from Kiss, and the rest is history.
Right,
but Pirate
right.
Radio opened up the door for all of that. I mean, on Pirate Radio, you know, you just did what you want.
I mean, pirate music exists because of Pirate Radio, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I mean, you know, you wouldn't hear Jack Your Body or the big house tune or the big jungle tunes of the day on Radio 1 or Capital or any of those stations. You heard it on Pirate. And that's why Pirate had, you know, it's always had that... We'll always have that really fond memories of doing Pirate Radio. And it was everything. And I think dance music owes Pirate Radio a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, me too.
And I don't think it gets the respect it deserves, really.
No, I don't either. And I think that's because not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah.
You know, there was a sense of community there and a sense of, you know, tuning in and excitement and shit, I've got to listen to that and tune into this. You know, there was a sense of excitement that you, I don't know whether it exists anymore amongst my gen because
it's all spread out. That's what the problem is.
Yes.
It's so easy accessible now, you know.
Yeah.
You
and people can just throw away what they
exactly.
want and
yeah,
onto
true,
the
exactly.
next track.
True,
exactly.
true. I mean, you know, even the fact that, if you listen to tunes in the 90s, there was, you know, Soul in Motion and True Stories by Crust. These tunes were 13 minutes long. And now I'm getting tunes that are 3.5 minutes long.
Yeah.
Do you know
that's
what I mean?
Right.
And I said to someone, why are you making your tunes so short? And he was like, because kids, their attention span, because they flick through stuff on Spotify and Tidal and streaming, they don't listen to tracks for more than a minute. And I was like, well...
Yeah.
And that's a lot to do with, like, club DJs too. Like,
true.
Drum and bass, I mean, a lot of club DJs don't play tunes for longer than a minute.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not
yeah.
my
right.
personal
yeah.
way.
That's right.
Playing music.
Interesting
but.
Point.
And we don't, you know, we were brought up in a completely
I mean,
way.
If somebody makes a tune for 5 minutes, there's got to be something in there past 1 minute.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I need to hear.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But,
so,
you know,
yeah.
that's probably why we are who we are and people are who they are. But playing tracks for 30 seconds or a minute is not really my way personally.
Do you think, looking at where you started in clubs and stuff, and in my notes here, it says that you guys, well, I think it was you, Groove, that started DJing in illegal raves and warehouse parties.
Yeah.
And again, that's another thing that I've will never probably ever experience.
Oh,
and
you will now. It's COVID times.
You say that,
yeah.
though, but there are
real
people
talk.
Having
yeah,
no,
that's
illegal...
what I'm saying. That's
oh,
what I'm
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, got you.
That's
yeah,
what
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
saying,
yeah,
man. You can experience it now.
Yeah.
This is something that I was going to ask Sister Bliss on the last podcast, but I didn't get time to. Do you think that all of this is creating a resurgence in illegal raves?
Well, people want to party. No matter how much you lock them up, and you say they can't do something, they're going to prove you wrong and go and do it anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's been no raves, man. How many people are hungry for a proper rave? Of course they're going to do illegal parties. Why wouldn't they? This is how the whole thing was built in the first place.
I mean, yeah, you've got to remember, you know, rave was built on, you know, people got to remember what promoters used to do. They used to go to fields, someone's field.
A set up a sound system.
Their property, they used to break in and set up lasers and sound systems and get 20,000 people. And without these people even knowing.
Without one flyer going out.
Without and one flyer going
probably
out.
Said
wow.
that, what was it back in the day? A pager.
It was
you had
a
pager. You get a page.
Or
you
used to get, the pirate radio used to give you a number. You used to have to go to a phone box.
Oh, yeah.
And then you'd ring the number and they'd tell you where the rave was.
Yeah.
That's how.
Because there weren't mobile phones back then. That's the
thing.
There
were no mobile phones.
Yeah.
So things were really guerrilla back in the day. People, that's what people used to do. And I think people are going to do that again. Of course they're going to do that. It's just like even in the 40s when there was prohibition, when people, alcohol was banned, what did they do? They had speakeasies, they had parties, do you know what I mean? And that's going to happen now. And I think, you know, it probably something new will come out of this, new music or a new way will come out of this.
Yeah.
Just like it did with rave.
Yeah. Yeah. I can, well, I'd like to think so, because I think there's also another thing for me that there was such a movement back in like the late 80s, early 90s that I'm not sure will ever be, well, that I'm not sure will be achieved again.
It can't be, because it was new then. It's not new now. No matter how you disguise it now, it's still a rave, isn't it?
Well, for example, if you take dubstep for a genre, like that genre was like this whole invented thing and then died in the UK on its ass after 2 years.
Mm.
You know, there hasn't really been that lasting. What do you think? Go on.
You know what? I think there's two things. I think, you know, when people talk about the 90s being better or the 80s being better, or the early 2000s being better, I think that's down to nostalgia. I think that's down to you being younger. And you're remembering things. Because I tell you the reason why I say that, because you still get people now going, you changed my life tonight.
Mm.
You know, I've never been to a rave before and you've changed everything.
Yeah.
And in 20 years' time, they're going to say it's not like same. It was in 2020. Yeah, exactly. Or 20,
I mean, we get this every bloody decade.
Every decade we get it. You know, some people prefer the 90s, some people prefer the early 2000s. So I think it's a nostalgia thing. And that's the one trap that me and Groove don't fall into. I never say there was a golden age.
No.
I still feel the same way about the music.
Really?
I still get, I really do.
It's all about the music.
I honestly do.
I was telling this geezer just now, who's been a unit, I still can't believe I actually get paid for this shit.
That's
this
real,
is nuts.
That's real, man.
What, you've actually paid me?
Yeah, for doing
it's unbelievable.
So I don't know. I think it was different. I think, you know, I've been going out since, as I said, I'm a lot older than Greg. So I've been going out since the 70s. And
what?
Late 70s, not early 70s, not 71. More like 79. And every decade people go, even my dad, right? When I used to play funk, I'm talking about Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye. My dad used to say to me, music ain't as good as it was 10 years before.
Yeah.
You know, this funk, and I was listening to jazz funk and he was like, well, it's nothing like jazz.
It's a mockery on their
music. Yeah, it's not like Miles Davis.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I think every generation
goes,
I think it's a generational thing. I think you start going, oh, well, it wasn't as good as it was before. But
I don't feel that. That's why we're here, because we're inspired by what's happening next, not what happened before.
Yeah.
What happened before. That's great. We love that. But what's next? What you got for me now?
Yeah. I mean, I did some amazing gigs last year. You know, me and Groove went to... The good thing as well, you've got to remember, Becky, is we travel. So then you go to places where drum and bass is new. And there's New Zealand, which is not new there, but it's there's a real resurgence. And they're having it like you wouldn't believe. And sometimes you have 6-7 different DJs touring New Zealand, and it's a small island. You know, it's not a big place, and they absolutely love it. And I went to China in January, Shenzhen, and it was young Chinese kids. I went before, and it was a lot of expats there, a lot of people that knew Fabian Groove that worked in China, but now it's Chinese kids. And they were getting into it. The club was rammed. They were having it like it was the 90s. And I was like, Jesus, man. So, you know, I think it's all about
what you make of it.
And what you make of it and how you was. You know, you're going back to the time when it was new. You know, when it was new to you.
Yeah.
And you felt like, oh, my God, my life's changed. But that still happens.
Yeah.
You've got to remember that. It still happens, man.
Yeah, I'd have definitely said it. I've had those moments throughout my life, and still, especially with like drum and bass, like the way it's all now merged into multi different genres within the genre has been so lovely to watch. Because I suppose when I started listening to drum and bass, it was still in its really in like '03, '04. It was still like
infancy.
So I've managed to see it now with fucking Neurofunk and Liquid and all the other
and drum and bass festivals. You got to remember this, but Let It Roll, which is in Eastern Europe.
Yeah,
they get 20,000.
Yeah, it's massive,
and that's a drum and bass festival. There's no house
as well. It's like double that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so it's really healthy, and that's the most important thing for me. It's not dying. Me and Groove, right? I've heard so many times that drum and bass, when dubstep came along,
you are finished.
It's dead. Everyone's
jungle's dead.
It's dead.
Oh, wait, look, I ain't seen you around for a while. Still doing music. Like, yeah, whatever, man.
And then when Garage happened, exactly the same thing. You know, jungle's dead. It's all kind of like, you know, it's played out now and it's still going.
Yeah.
And it's stronger than it's ever been before. I don't think there's ever been that many young producers about. And you know, there's K9, there's Boo, there's, you know, there's young guys.
Some of my favourite, Benny L, all of them, new generation.
They're coming with a different take on things, and it's just
so fresh, like, the shit they're making.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, yo, what's next, man?
Yeah, we've got
you lot now. Who's next?
Yeah. And there's a real, you know, Groove's got these guys like Furnace. And,
there's a whole
bunch of new underground cats coming through. And they're doing some mad shit at the moment. You're hearing Chief, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
it's still,
I've noticed a bit of that.
It's gone on to the next phase now, which is great.
Mm.
Yeah, it's almost like the baton's being handed over slightly, isn't it? And through each generation. And what's been amazing is that jungle and drum and bass have been the genre that has carried on for so long, and I can't ever see it slowing down now.
No, it's never been that high. Do you know what I'm saying? It's never been really peak mainstream-wise, and that's what helped it, I think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's always got that notoriety of it still being a little bit underground.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I remember back even in the 90s, you weren't embarrassed to say you played it, but it was so extreme. I remember once I took my sister out to a drum and bass rave, and she left after about 10 minutes. And I said, why did you leave? She said it sounded like a crash, a car reversing down a mountain backwards and crashing. And I was kind of like, she said, that's creative. What some of the tune sounds like to me. And, people really used to turn, I mean, even house guys used to really turn their nose up at us, man. We, you know, the media weren't interested. I remember Mix Mag had this headline and they called it Charlie by the Prodigy. I remember they said, you know, this is the end of rave. You know, music can't get worse than this. And, you know, while they were just bigging up all the house stuff. So there was always that, we've always felt like we were never really...
We're the bastard child of music, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's funny. Zinc said, because obviously Zinc has played multi-genres as well. And he was telling a story of a guy, didn't mention names, but a guy who came up to you guys and started slagging Zinc off because he was playing house, and you guys went, well, we fucking play house. What have you got to say about that?
Yeah, we're not having it. I'm not having it. When people start going, oh, well, he's gone off to make other music, and so what? He's a fucking producer.
My mate said to me one time, great chefs don't just make fish and chips.
Exactly. Do you think that now it's become, I must get on to you guys in the club and how club transitions and your first track, but do you feel like it's more acceptable now to play multi-genre in a set than it ever has been before?
I suppose so.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, like, not everybody just likes one facet of the music, do they? They like many different things.
I'd have said so now. I feel like the raves I go to now, it's more expected for a DJ to play more than one genre. Whereas when I was 18 and I was first going to raves, I remember if you were in the middle of a drum and bass rave and it went halftime or it went dubstep, people were there in the middle, putting their middle fingers up to the DJ, like, what the fuck? Yeah.
And so they should.
But you know what I mean? I mean, it's become more accepted now.
I find the multi-genre thing is more of a commercial thing. Do you know what I mean? I don't really see that in underground clubs.
Not so much. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's happened more in the last year. You know, we play after someone like Sherelle, who's playing, like, you know,
she's
doing her thing, and then we'll come on. Yeah. And, you know, but I tell you the difference. Before, if you did that, you used to be so worried about them not getting it.
Mm.
And people get drum and bass now. I mean, back in the day, I remember once we went out to a Radio 1 thing. And it was a garage thing. It was a proper garage nut. They brought us to play drum and bass. And I was shitting myself. I just thought, this ain't going to work. And it kind of did, and it kind of didn't work. But now, I think drum and bass...
Yeah, you know, you think everybody else is going to be in a problem.
Everyone else is going to have a problem, not us.
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait till they come on and they start hitting some drums. And then, you know, then as soon as they hear that...
I mean, like, when you go to a place and you hear house being played, you think, I'm going to smash the... It used to be like that. You used to think, oh, it shit, there's bloody house being played. What am I going to play?
Yeah, you know what I mean? It's true. But now you'd be like, I can't wait to get on.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get on the KDB because I know I'm going to kill it tonight.
So let's talk about how you got started in clubs and what were the tunes around the time that, you know, really, really grabbed you by the bollocks?
Well, we started off in house. So, you know, we started off in house music.
We started before that. It was like playing funk and all
that. Yeah, true.
Sound systems and all that.
Yeah, we was into the whole sound system culture.
Yeah.
Different... aspects of going out and clubbing, you know, going out and clubbing in the early 80s is completely different from going out and clubbing now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a completely different experience.
Well, at least you can get into clubs now. I mean, back then, it's hard to even get into a club.
And
based on your colour.
Yeah, for real.
It's hard. Right, okay.
Black guys had to have, you know, if you walk in with two girls, you weren't getting into the club. Do you know what I'm saying? So,
for real. I mean, they used to tell us things like, oh, yeah, the club's busy. And we've been standing out here for an hour and there's two people who've gone in there. You know what I mean? Or are you with girls? Because if you're not with girls, we don't want too much lads getting in there.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
I still think it's a bit shit that the whole girls go free before 11 is still a thing as well. It's
ridiculous.
And all of that.
It's ridiculous. Mm.
That old mentality.
It's old mentality. Yeah. And you know, that kind of shit's got to go. But it was worse back in the day. Don't get it twisted.
I don't know if girls actually getting free are actually moaning about it, though. I don't
know. But it's it's the principle of it.
Yeah, I hear you.
You're bringing it up for other things to come in.
I'm feeling you.
I understand your dilemma, but they're still here before 11.
Listen, there's still girls at Total Science in their fucking bikinis dancing around like this.
Yeah,
I mean,
and they were there before 11.
Yeah.
Allow it. Let's get one of your tunes in. What was introduce one of your tunes? Let's go for Lenny D'Ice. Tell me a bit more about this track.
This is a track. I'm so glad you put it first because this is the track that changed everything for me and Groove.
Yes,
and changed everything for everybody because me and Groove were we were mixing house with breakbeats. Before Jungle even came in, that was a prototype. We were mixing house tracks, and it was kind of like what you'd say jungle techno is. So we'd get a house track, and then we'd get a track with a breakbeat, and we'd mix them together. And
yeah, it was hip hop beats sped up, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's what we used to get. Masters at Work used to do And Frankie Bones, a DJ called Frankie Bones, used to do a thing called Bones Breaks, where they used to just put breaks, kind of like sample packs in a funny sort of way. And then Masters at Work used to just do a break on the B side of their tracks, and me and Groove kind of keyed into that. And Groove used to say to me, "Oh, have you heard that break? We could speed it up to 33, you know, to 45.
Yeah,
45. And, you know, don't get me wrong, if I heard it now, it probably sounds terrible. But at the time,
you have to remember, we're coming from an age where there weren't Technics turntables as well. That's another thing. Right? So, speeding up tunes, you get to do it with your finger.
Yes.
We'll be speeding it up. You hear a tune flying around.
Hey, man,
it was crazy, man. I can't even believe we got away with that for so many years. But
yeah. I know.
But yeah.
I do not want to hear the mix.
I mean, technology's got a big part to play in it.
Yeah, it has. And We Are You was the tune that.
That incorporated, We Are was the tune which was saying what we was trying to make on them turntables.
That's what we was trying to say. That's what we was trying to do for
playing music. We was trying to innovate that.
And he came out with this track.
He made it as a tune.
Right.
That it's got the Four to the Floor. It's got the Amen coming in.
Yeah.
It's just a mad hybrid.
And it sounds super fresh even now, doesn't it?
Nobody makes tunes like that. No one even makes tunes like that anymore. It's still, when that Amen comes in, man, it's all over. That will smash up any dance.
Well, let's play it. Lenny the Ice, We Are E. Trying to create this sound on the decks at raves, or whatever you would. What were you using if you weren't using what turntables? The Technics that you had
old school belt driven turntables.
Oh, we used to get Garrard.
I don't know what they were.
Yeah, we used to. They were literally.
They were all the same basis. It just belt drives, which is a whole different mechanism. So they were actually like bits of rubber that was making the.
For real. When you used to start the tune, they used to slur.
Yeah.
They used to just go, and then it used to start every single tune. That's how we started.
Like a gram, you know, remember grams? You know what grams are?
No, she's literally going to remember grams.
Yeah, she's 90s, baby.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Go to the Natural History Museum. They got
you might see that in there, yeah.
But yeah, that's how we started. So when Techniques came along, man, that was another thing that was a massive.
Yeah, I mean, like, you have to remember these things cost a load of dough. We weren't rich guys.
Yeah.
So real. To even use them, we had to be playing out in clubs.
So what would you practice on?
You didn't.
You didn't practice when you went to a club. Literally practiced when you went to a nightclub.
It's all live,
man. They've held their price. I mean, they were like a lot of money.
A lot of money back then.
So because you were DJing the sound, did you find that other producers were coming up to you with the sound that you were trying to create in a track?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
That's what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
Right, okay, cool.
You know, what happened then was after We Are E, then we had, guys like Paul Ibiza and this label called Living Dream and Moving Shadow. Then they all started to make it because we were championing this stuff at Rage. That's what we were doing. You know, we kind of like, gravitated more towards this sound. Yeah. Because you've got to remember, Rage was a house club. It was a purist house club as well on the main floor. And we came and
transitioned
completely changed the vibe in there. I don't think that would ever happen now. No. I don't think that would ever happen. I don't think no one would take a risk like that. It was a real massive risk what they took.
in one what of the- to hear a sound, a new sound being played in the club, and go home and try and make that so that you guys had a
No, not even that. But being in an actual house club and changing it to a drums club.
Yeah,
how right. Did you, got you.
You know, it was a massive right. thing. Rage was like they. What the original Rage was, they were trying to get the whole vibe of Paradise Garage from New York. They were trying to get this whole New York real garagey sound, lots of vocals. And he completely done a U-turn, got us in there playing some ghetto shit.
Yeah, some
that's
ghetto
what we
house.
Were doing
yeah.
and experimenting.
Techno.
We were playing techno, we were experimenting with break beats, we were playing
everything.
Not the kind of house that was being played in there before.
Right, you know, I see. So it was a risk for the promoters to have you guys
risk.
There.
And right. I remember him saying to us that, you know, the old purists weren't happy with the way everything was going, but it was rammed in there, so...
Yeah, oh, numbers don't
do?
Lie, man.
What's he going to do? Numbers don't lie, as
yeah.
you said. And,
yeah.
and we were smashing it. We were literally smashing it every single week.
We didn't go to the main floor for a couple of years. We was just being tested upstairs. But what happened...
Yeah, I saw this in your in the documentary yesterday.
Yeah, we just backup DJs, basically. We was just hosting the room too. So,
and there's too many people upstairs.
Yeah, too many people upstairs.
That must have been cool as fuck, man. That must have been such a nice, like, oh shit, we're onto something real big here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we're
exactly.
doing something great. It must have been amazing to kind of.
It's like an apprenticeship, man. We just smashed it.
Yeah,
we didn't even know. I mean, I don't look at stuff like that, but we just saw people there dancing. That's all we ever look. That's all I ever care about. I didn't think about the numbers downstairs or if we were going to get promoted or anything like that. I didn't think of any of that.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
the vibe.
Just yeah. the vibe, man.
Absolutely. Mm.
Just being happy to play music on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about Rage. I don't want to go too much into Rage, as I said, because you guys have a documentary that people can watch and you've done the hard work for me on Rage.
We've spoken about it a lot.
Well... I'd like to know, in your opinion, what made Rage so unique and influential, even in places like Chicago?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's because we just didn't give a shit, basically. We just, like, played music. You have to remember, a lot of people follow scripts, man. We didn't follow any scripts.
Mm.
You know, we just played what was new, what was fresh, what the new sound was. Every single week, you know, we hunted for tunes, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't no, oh, you're going to come in there and you're going to hear a load of anthems. Yo, we didn't deal with that, man. We just, like, kept rolling out, hunting, fresh.
You know I think saying? It was, you know what? It was an experiment that paid off. They don't always pay off.
No,
you know what I'm saying? And someone taking a risk like that, that's why it's worth taking risk, because he took a massive risk.
Massive.
He could have lost everything, and he took a huge risk on us. And it paid off.
Yeah.
And I think that the payoff was worth it because...
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he had all kinds of organisations that led out of Rage. Dance 91, Dance This. He had loads of things, spin-offs of Rage. And, you know, it made him, man.
But, you know, the thing is as well, we had no idea. That's another thing, Becky, you've got to remember. We didn't have any idea what was going on. Like, it's only until since the last couple of years everyone's been talking about Rage. That it's really hit home what we did there.
It was.
Yeah.
Because we've always moved on. We've never been old school DJs. We've never looked back ever. We've never ever done that. So you've got this thing as well where you're just working constantly. So you've got no time to look back and sit there and think, you know what? Look, fucking Rage was amazing. Because you're thinking about your next gig.
Rage was like when it was.
It was a long time ago. So until this everyone, you know, started talking about it now and it's gained a lot of traction with everyone kind of like, you know, realizing it was the birth of jungle.
Mm.
We've never really sat back and processed anything.
We don't sit there and pat ourselves on the back thinking, yeah, we're great.
Oh, yeah, we did this and that.
No, that was last year, man. You know, what are we going to do next year?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's the future's always a lot more important.
How did you find the 30 years of Rage reunion? in terms of, because it was all the same lineup, right? It was all the old school DJs from back in day. Yeah. And it looked like a proper, like,
there were a lot of hairlines missing.
A lot of teeth missing.
It's true. Few bulges here and there. Yeah. Generally, it was pretty
much. It's true, though, you know. It's so much things that we saw from the past, right?
Yeah.
And it was going, you don't look any different. And I'm thinking, well, you kind of do.
You can't see it.
But yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing to see, because we had what was great, a lot of the people from even the early Acid House days turned up.
Yeah.
And we saw people that we haven't seen for 30 odd years.
Yeah, some of the old time ravers.
You know, they all came down. Yeah,
a lot of industry people there as well that actually didn't, you know, weren't at Rage, but heard about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So they got to come down to experience the music that was played at that time.
So it was amazing. It really was amazing. You know, we were really worried because, you know, you do these things, you never know.
Yeah.
But having it back in the heavens was really important.
Yeah, that's a big part of it.
It was a massive thing. And you know, having it back in the heavens was made it feel like Rage.
Authentic.
It really made it feel authentic, man.
So one of the songs that was taken off the Rage album was Champion Sound Key Project. And it features quite predominantly in the documentary. Mm-hmm. I was listening out for a song I could pick for the podcast, and I was watching that last night, and I was like, oh, this one's fucking sick. I'm gonna just send this one. And I was like, shit, they picked it. So tell me a bit about this song.
Oh, it's an amazing tune, man. And it's not aged. You know, some of these tunes are not aged well. You know, some of them, you know, you can't really play them anymore. But like Terminator, these tunes are timeless. They really are. And Champion Sound still got that vibe. It still sounds relevant. And it's a very simple tune. But the stabs in it are just great. It's so well produced, and it's just got that energy.
Especially for that time, man.
Yeah, man, for real. Yeah. And
one of the early jungle records, right?
Yeah, man. That used to tear up the dance, man. And it still does. You play jungle, so you play Put That On, you know that it's Passport Tune. You can't go wrong. Passport Tune, man. So
Passport Tune.
Tune you can play anywhere.
Yeah. Come on, you should have figured that one out. That wasn't difficult, Becky.
Right, let's listen to this Passport Tune. It's Passport where I'm from. This is Champion Sound, Key Project. Is that it sounds like most of the drum and bass I listen to has been influenced massively from those crunchy bass sounds.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's mad, like, how it just sounds super fresh to me. It just sounds like you can tell that how the journey's happened with drum and bass, but how true it has stayed really to those early jungle records and those kind of crunchy synths that they were using back then, and how, you know, this drum, the drum nowadays with drum and bass, it's almost like a homage to the old stuff.
A lot of these guys, a lot of producers nowadays, Boo and a lot of those kind of guys are paying homage, you know, that's what they're doing. But it's great because they're coming with a whole fresh take on what it used to be, and they're just giving it a real kind of youthfulness, which is
they're keeping the basic rules, man, and then, you know, switching it up a little piece and just making it their own, which is good.
Yeah, which is nice for me because as somebody who feels like I've kind of missed out on the best days of rave, I feel like the music I go to now, the music I hear going to raves now is still just as exciting as it was back then. So it's actually quite nice to know that I haven't necessarily missed out on anything. But have you seen a change to the scene over the years?
We just see it's always changing. That's the whole point of it. You know, this is like cutting
edge. Do you think technology has changed?
Massive part. I mean, everybody's a producer, everybody's a DJ now. This wasn't around 25 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, you had to go and spend your big money, go to a studio, you know, hire it out for the day, you know, spend a bigger bag of change and made sure you came out with something.
Yeah. Now people there was so much pressure.
Yeah, man.
There was so much pressure.
You could have 10 tunes sitting down on your laptop now. Playing about. Mm. Back in the day, you had to finish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's another bag of change.
I remember we done a tune called Rage. And someone put up the money for it. And we literally, you know, he was paying by the hour. So he was like, this tune has to be finished by a certain time. So you did. You had timelines. You had to finish these tunes. That's why people...
What, you produced a track called Rage?
Yeah.
So how was that all? I'm guessing that was all with analog synths and having to record it through a DAT tape and all that.
Proper, yeah, drum machines, you know.
Fucking balling, isn't it?
That's what, exactly, as I say, when you're hiring a studio, these things that took time.
Yeah.
So if you have to hire 12 hours minimum.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? So
that weren't cheap.
People are rolling out tunes in 3 hours now. On the laptop, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'd be, you know, it's a whole different scenario now, man.
Do you ever think, and from what I've gathered just from talking to you guys are super, like, you only think, you're very present and future. I've got the idea that you don't really look back, which is, you know what, I've noticed a few people I've spoken to, apart from Pete Tong, but have kind of just rolled with the punches. But do you ever think that if that sort of technology was about when you were growing up, that things could have been different or you could have, you know, done things that you've done earlier on in your career or and the weight of stuff like that now, you know, do you ever wish that the technology was around when you were kids?
No, not at all. It's what it was. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'll never change what happened before. I don't want to change that. That's part of my history. And like, I loved what it was back then as well. It's just
I think the
now.
Fact it was harder. The fact it was harder, you had to grasp more.
That's what stems us though, isn't it?
That's what made us what we are. Do you know what I mean? You learn.
It's too throwaway now. That's my problem now. It's too throwaway. Like, tunes exist for 2 weeks and they're gone.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. I mean, we would push tunes throwaway now. Week in, week out for months. Now, people don't want to hear tunes like longer than... couple of weeks. Oh yeah, he's made another 5 tunes since then. It's kind of like that tune's old. And sometimes you get caught up in it. Sometimes, you know, you're so present that you forget about tunes that came out 2 months ago that were sick.
Exactly, it's too throwaway.
And you know, and you hear someone else play, you think, oh my god, I've stopped playing that tune because I think it's old. And it came out 8 weeks ago.
It probably still ain't even out yet.
It's not even out. You can't even get it. And you've got this thing in your brain where it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, that tune's dead now. And it's, you know, it's kind of like, that is a little bit annoying that you could just roll tunes out and really build tunes a lot more. Also, I think, you know, people are under pressure to bring tunes out quicker nowadays. I think because of Spotify and the way
it's streaming. It's a whole different way of selling music now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, and so, you're
only as good as your last Instagram post, that's isn't what it really? I'm trying to say. It's that vibe.
You know, look, when we used to be on Radio 1, we used to have to cut dubs. You've got to remember, we weren't playing shit. Like, we weren't playing CDs and we weren't playing dats. We were playing dubs. So we were spending... You couldn't just cut anything. You'd have to cut shit you liked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you can have put on a USB, tunes don't even really like that much. But you sit down and think, well, it might go
away. When you do that, it's less quality control.
There's less quality control because there's just, you can get away with
the tune as well.
I don't have to pay £60 for that and take a risk on it. Do you know what I'm saying? Before,
you just, didn't have to pay 25, 30, 50 pounds for it.
So. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, yeah,
right.
There's aspects of it. I'm glad we came through a harder time than it is now. I'm glad we did, because you learn lessons, man, that people ain't really learning right now.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So they won't be around for much, very
they
long.
They ain't going to be around for too long.
Because you've got to have some balls in this thing, man.
Yeah, man.
You've got to have some
thick
skin.
I was talking to my boyfriend. He books NAS. And has been the booker there for about nearly 15 years now. And we were talking about this because he's
like, he hasn't booked me enough. Tell him that.
Yeah.
Fucking talk, hell.
You know, you need to talk to your boy.
Oh, sorry, I'm cool. I was going to be at NAS this year. So I'm cool.
That was a joke. I was having a joke.
Cool. Fucking hell, he's going to shit himself. Bro, you're going to be on that lineup for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I know I am. Right at all.
But he actually told me not to talk about the dub plate culture and stuff, because he was like, you don't know enough about it, so don't mention it. But fuck it. Yeah. Andy mentioned at 16, I said earlier, that he would be in the queue for Music House and you guys would stroll on up, and you were basically the royalty of Music House. Was there a time when you guys were, you know, pissing into a bottle in the queue, waiting for 6 hours to get into music?
Let me tell you something about Music House. If you're David Rodigan or you're Just Shaka, you're nice. Ryder's got to sit down, right?
Yeah.
I've got to sit down. I've got to wait my 6 hours, because you don't go in front of Rodigan or Shaka, no matter who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I was spending a lot of money at Music House and I was getting a lot of love over there. But anytime one of those two come in, I'll go and get some lunch or something, because
Rodigan was that was his house.
That's his house.
I'm saying. So we were still not like
Shaka. Just Shaka, your house, not mine.
We went through that with record shops, you know, back in the day when we used to get records. We weren't, you know, first in line. We were queuing up like punters. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And the top DJs were getting their records. They used to just stroll in the shop, get their records in the bag, and walk out.
Yeah.
And we used to be.
We used to get the scraps.
We used to get the scraps, literally. So they used to get all the brand new shit, and we used to just get what was left. So we used to sit around the record shop for 6-7 hours just getting the scraps. And then you become that guy that gets the record. You walk in, and it's kind of like, I've got a bag of records for you. So we've been through that. You know, everything that has happened, you know, people go, yeah, royalty and whatever, but we've been through that. We've come through. The system.
Yeah.
We've been at the bottom of the pile, trust me.
Yeah.
We've been right at the bottom. And you know, by the time Music House got around and we were so-called royalty, we'd earned our stripes by then. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
And we still have to show respect to the other guys.
Yeah, we still, you know, we'd earned our stripes, and you know, and we were luckily, we were grateful that we were first in the queue, but we used to take the piss and just like, you know, like everybody has to wait, yeah? You wait till I finish cutting my shit. You know what I'm saying?
But you have to remember as well, they also didn't mind waiting, because they knew they was going to hear shit they ain't got. So they didn't actually mind. So when Andy and all that talking about how I was waiting 6 hours and all that, bro, he was getting a schooling. Yeah, remember
they,
that,
they were getting there. Don't get it twisted. Do you know what I mean? They were getting the education.
Bringing up people like, I just heard Groove cut that thing. Can I get a piece of that?
Looking in your basket, exactly. Seeing what you got.
You know what I'm saying?
Don't act like you was mad. You weren't mad.
Right, let's get some more music on. My track that I chose was Tic-Tac-Toe Ephemeral.
Yeah, Ephemeral.
Yeah. And I was listening through to the album, and this is the one that really stood out for me, because it was, again, what I was saying about the Q Project. It was one of those kind of tunes that I could hear where the current, you know, the new generation of drum and bass DJs, they're getting their inspiration from tunes like this.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
And it really stood out for me. I want to listen to it. It's Tic-Tac-Toe, Ephemeral.
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know that was one part of Basement Jacks that made that tune?
You're joking. Which one, Felix?
I think it was Felix.
It's probably Felix, yeah.
Yeah, it's Felix, yeah. And we remixed that as well.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. He came up to me. I saw him once and he went, you know, he was talking, he went, tic-tac-toe, do you know I made that tune? I was like, what?
Like, holy shit.
Yeah,
like
for
the
real.
Last person you think
mad.
Of.
That's what I'm saying.
Mad.
He's, you know what? I mean, I've always rated Basement Jacks. I actually sang Good Luck on The Voice years ago. So I've been a massive fan of Basement Jacks. Yeah, it was actually, in fact, Vula, I don't know if you know their singer Vula. She did Oh My Gosh. But we started talking because she was like, oh, I saw you doing Good Luck on the telly.
I didn't know you did that, man.
Yeah, so I've been a proper fan of Basement Jacks.
Yeah, well, they made that tune. Well,
no
Felix did. Yeah, it's
way.
Mad.
I'll have to, that's mad. So, I mean, I'll have to get them on and start talking about that as well.
Yeah.
And the other couple of tracks that we that you guys have chosen, again, I do. It sounds so fresh, and you can definitely hear where people have drawn their inspiration from. And it was these tunes, really, that it feels like to me that it was these tunes that really birthed a whole new scene, vibe, genre that became what it did. One of your choices is LTJ Bookham, Music. Let's listen to that. From that, like the long held pads and the strings and the kind of twinkly bits in there.
Yeah, it was called intelligent drum and bass back in the
day. Yeah, that's what they called it. Intelligent Mixmag called it that actually.
That's probably one of the top five drum and bass tunes of all time.
Oh,
for me
that
personally.
Tune is just like,
I'd like to say it was in the top three, but then his head would get a bit big. I tell him all the time, man. I love that tune.
Is just like,
I always thank him for
just
it.
Just gives me tingles down my spine every time I hear that. Even hearing it then.
Sounds like it's just current.
Just sounds current.
Yeah.
It sounds like nothing else as well. I don't think there's been another tune that sounds like that.
There's probably just about four sounds in it.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, there's probably about four sounds in this. There's nothing to
work.
That tune.
And
he's
sounds
made
so
it sound
as
that's
well.
What
yeah.
I'm saying.
He's made it sound like orchestras played that, man. You know what I mean? And that's the magic of working with, you know, that's why technology is not always a great thing. You know what I mean? These guys were making all that shit on next to nothing. And that's just raw talent in that tune. I mean, he's made some great tunes, but that is the best.
Yeah, that's the one.
That is the one, man. It's just, and how long is that tune? Nine, 10 minutes?
Something like that.
Wow.
And he's made the tune interesting the whole way through. You don't get bored of it. And it's, that in itself is you know, you've got to put a bit of respect on his name for doing that. And yeah, it's amazing tune.
What a collection of tunes you've chosen. I feel truly blessed to have actually got a, you know, list to have gone through and to fill my ears with such great tunes. It has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you guys.
Oh, thanks for that.
Listen, thank you so much. And
fascinating.
And respect to what you're doing as well.
Yeah, man, keep doing what you're doing, man. You're entertaining us.
Because
you know what's
great? It's great to have someone who's broken the mainstream with your songwriting and what you do. And
thank you. You're
such a real fan of this music.
That's all right. Just remember me when I'm coming to look for some vocals, yeah? That's what I'm saying. Just remember me, yeah? Just remember me.
Yeah.
Remember I've done this to you, yeah?
And when this is all over and done, we're the boys booking Naz next time, yeah?
Yeah, I got him.
You need to get a pen and paper and write this down because you're not writing this down. I'm not getting...
Right, no, respect to what you're doing. And every time I see, you know, I'll say to my daughter, you know, she loves drum and bass. You know?
Love
really?
It.
And I know you do. I know you genuinely do. It's not no joke to
No. And I remember when I did Afterglow and I'd get so gassed that no matter what state, no matter how big my pupils were, I'd run up to the DJ and be like, I sang this, I wrote it. And then I'd be there like, smoking. Just fucking, like, it's, I fell into this job. This job and built for me. I've been like, and what has been nice is because I want to resonate with other people from my age and especially other girls, I suppose. And I think drum and bass has definitely become more female. There's more of a female presence at raves
definitely.
Now.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to be able to talk to, like, literally, I feel like if it wasn't for the fact that I've been doing these songs that have got into the charts, nobody would fucking talk to me. And that's how I feel. I feel like I'm just some girl from the Midlands.
We would.
So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
100%.
Last question before you go. What has kept you two together over 30 years and kept you going?
Jokes, man.
Yeah, jokes. You know what?
You can see how we are.
You know
this is
what?
How we are all the time.
It's jokes.
It's just pure jokes.
He sends me, right, the maddest memes and videos. Me and Groove, I don't think we've ever gone 10 minutes without laughing. No matter what's happened, we laugh. And I just think we've got a real bond.
Yeah, of course.
You know, sometimes if you've got a real bond with someone, you can't really explain it. It's deep. It's really, really deep. And I'm so glad.
Yeah, man. Same here, man. I'm going to leave with a smile on my face.
Because we get so much. Sometimes we cry with laughter.
We cry with laughter, but we've never had an argument or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So that shows you how deep that bond is.
Really, what we should do, really, is give that relationship advice.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they don't know how to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They don't know how to do it. We don't argue. We don't do none of that shit. You know what I'm saying? So, no, there's a special synergy with us. And it's great. And, you know, and it's, it will all last forever.
Long may it remain.
Yeah, long may it last.
Yeah.
Well, this has been an absolute honour. Thank you so, so much. And I really hope to see you guys at a rave soon. And
yeah,
I'll have a drink with you guys backstage.
Make sure,
and
but you're paying. Remember, Nice Festival. And vocals. Nice Festival vocals. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a checklist.
Yes. Yes.
You're not writing it down, Becky. I need to see you writing it down.
Sorry. Yeah. Mass vocals. Got it.
Right, thanks a lot, man.
Thank you so much.
Have the best day. Thank you so much for your time, guys. It was an absolute pleasure.
No problem.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
The Art of Rave is presented and written by me, Becky Hill. It is a Strawberry Blonde production for my record label, Echo Records.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.